Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. It is Monday. That means my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. But it's a special morning here. It is the morning where Eric and Colin are live in studio with me, and we are going to go through the entire year, 2018, best, worst movies, best performances, all that stuff. And if you want to, we're here, it's 312-981-7200. So let me welcome the guys to the studio. Colin Suter. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
And Eric Childers.
Hello.
How you guys doing?
Very good.
All right.
As good as can be.
Yeah. Hey, do you know last night Bohemian Rhapsody won Best Picture?
I heard.
Might not be the last we hear about that movie tonight.
My God. No, it won't.
It's getting a Best Picture nomination. Prepare yourselves.
Oh, no, I know. Mm-hmm. It's insane. Completely insane. Mm-hmm. Well, welcome, guys. Overall, what did you guys start with you, Colin? What did you think of the year just in general?
Very good.
Yeah.
I had a hard time. Well, not a hard time, but like making my worst list this year. Actually, like realized like I skipped a lot, but I didn't skip that much because I looked at other people's worst lists and I was like, I saw most of those. So it must not have been that bad of a year if I'm like kind of struggling. You know, it's a little harder than usual to make my worst list look like a list of really awful films, but I did it. But I think this is a very good year.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Eric?
Yeah. I mean, just thinking of the opposite spectrum of it. I mean, looking at my best list and the way I kind of approached it this year, looking at a lot of films that I think are really going to stand the test of time. I these aren't just one-offs, popularity things like Bohemian Rhapsody, for example. These are movies that are going to stand out in the genres that they're a part of and, you know, be a long-lasting part of a lot of these filmmakers' careers. So I think it's a real standout year.
Yeah, I thought it was a good year, too. I did manage to make a worst of list.
Mm-hmm.
So it's there.
Yeah.
There's some real stinkers on the list. And we also have our subcategories, which we're going to be doing a little bit later on, which is always a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But so that's it. Why don't we start? Okay. And I've got the top 20 best films.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I'll get us started, and then we'll go to Colin, and then we'll go to Eric. Okay.
Right.
So here we go. These are the best movies of 2018, according to us. All right. My number 20 is Bad Times at the El Royale, which was a movie that I thought no one saw. But I thought it was kind of criminally underseen and underrated. Some people say it's a Tarantino knockoff, which, okay, fine. But it's got a great cast headed by the great Jeff Bridges, who, by the way, was fantastic at the Golden Globes.
Yes, he was.
He was Jeff Bridges, man.
Yep.
Did not disappoint.
No, nope. Absolutely not. So, but I really enjoyed this movie. I thought the cast was great, and it was clever, and it was funny, and I thought... Chris Hemsworth was, I think it's maybe my favorite performance of his, and I really liked it. It was, you know, just a crime thriller, also very funny, and John Hamm, outstanding in it. Why am I blanking on the
Cynthia Erivo?
Yeah, no, not her. She was awesome. The kid who's
Lewis Pullman.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. Bill's son.
Fantastic performance. So. So that's my number 20, Bad Times at the El Royale, a movie that six people saw. Okay. All right, Colin, what about you?
Well, it's probably six more people than who saw my number 20, which is unless they came to our film festival. Number 20 is a movie called Bodied. This is a YouTube original, but it's a film about... what is it? Rap off. What is it called again? Battle rap. Thank
battle
you.
Rap, yeah.
Battle rap. And it's stars a guy who's just this scrawny little white kid who just wants to like get in on this world. And once he does, it changes him forever. And you can feel like yourself changing as you're watching it because it's a movie that just takes down everybody. You know, if you think you're woke, you know, you think you're in tune with everything in the culture, well, you're going to get a beat down too with this movie. It doesn't pull any punches. And it is fierce and it is, daring and it doesn't care if you tune out. directed by Joseph Kahn. So this is a major step up for this director, and a really good performance by Callum Worthy, who's the kid in the movie, and just what he goes through and what happens to him is pretty astonishing, and is really one of the standouts of our festival. And it's, like I said, it's a YouTube original, so you can go on YouTube and rent it or order it or whatever. That's where I guess you have to see it, so and you should.
Okay. All right. There's number 20 for Colin. Okay, Eric, what's your number 20?
Well, we have kind of a theme going here with movies that people didn't go to see. and this one kind of might fly in the face of my introduction to my top 20 list about movies that people might be talking about years. But I know at least three people that certainly will, including myself. My number 20 is Welcome to Marwen. And it is kind of my giant F you to everyone putting this film here, because I couldn't come up with a number 20 that I thought stood out. And the more I thought about this movie, I really wish I had a chance to see it a second time. But, I you know, you and I talked about this at your screening of it, Nick, that, you know, there's a lot going on in this movie that I think is being overlooked in the face of people making snap judgments about it. I think there's really interesting stuff about art. There's really interesting stuff about grief, and bullying and all the kind of stuff. They're not afraid to make Krell's character a little creepy at times. And I think that it's also a very self-reflexive portrait of Robert Zemeckis himself, which is always something I find fascinating when filmmakers do. So I'm unashamed to put this movie in my top 20, because I want people to talk about it, even if they're going to talk negatively about it.
It's not going to be the first time we hear this title.
I said three people. Yeah. You're one of those.
Okay, so there you go. All right, let's get back to this. Number 19 on my list is Annihilation. One of the most fascinating science fiction movies of the year. And it really is a Natalie Portman was in this film. Came out early in the year. I mean,
February.
It was February, yeah, almost a year ago. And it's a movie that really burrows under your skin. I mean, it really, you know, there are sequences in the movie where you just are completely freaked out the entire, and I thought it was a fascinating movie as well, like a great piece of science fiction, but also really scary and terrific performances. And the final 15 minutes of this movie is just so mind-boggling, weird, and hypnotic. I love the score. I think it's just a great piece of weird science fiction. Also very, very intelligent stuff, and there's a lot going on. And at times it reminded me of The Thing, and there's just really creepy images in it. There's a really terrifying scene involving a monster that takes place about halfway through the movie that is really one of the scariest scenes of the year, without question. So it's an intense movie. It's got a lot of ideas. Alex Garland is the director, and who previously made
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, which is another great piece of science fiction, and a movie about a lot of ideas. So this is a guy who I think is doing great work in that genre and rising above it and making really, you know, original idea filled movies. So Annihilation, number 19. Okay.
My number 19 is another movie that not a lot of people saw, and I promise, after I get past these first five movies, I will mention movies that people have seen and heard of, I promise. But speaking of thought-provoking science fiction, The Endless is my number 19. This is from the directors Justin Benson and Aaron Moorhead. They're also the stars of the movie, and they made a movie called Spring a few years ago that we talked about a lot. These guys are flying a little too under the radar for my liking, and this is a movie about these two brothers who grew up in this cult, and then they got out of it, and then they decide to pay the cult a visit, even though they have disagreements about doing that, and just, you know, who they've become since then and what the cult has become and how they kind of perceive it differently now that they're revisiting it. I kind of have a perverse fascination with cults and communes and things like that, so this is definitely, like, you know, in my wheelhouse and definitely something I'm interested in right off the bat. But I mean, these guys really do some amazing work, and with, you know, very small budgets, and they're just, you know, just like Spring was very thought-provoking science fiction, but not on a grand scale. This is also the similar kind of deal. And, you know, just kind of, you can watch it on Netflix. It's on Netflix right now. So if you want to check it out, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
It's a really terrific film.
All right. 19 for you, Eric.
Okay. As we all kind of do battle to which film people saw the least, I think I might be leading with this current one. My number 19 is a film called Small Town Crime. It was a film that played South by Southwest in 2017. It kind of opened, I think it opened at Facets or like one theater here in Chicago back in January. It's this great showcase for John Hawkes as a alcoholic policeman, now a private detective, who stumbles upon this dead girl, or this nearly dead girl on the road, and starts piecing together, you know, exactly what happened to her, where she came from, what happened to her. It's just a terrific detective story. It's a great mystery, great cast. Anthony Anderson, Octavia Spencer, Clifton Collins Jr., who's hilarious in it, Robert Forster, who's great in it. And it's just people, you know, who like good detective stories and like particularly violent detective stories that end in a great shootout sequence. This is a movie that people should find and seek out. I urge people to do a Small Town Crime is my number 19.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Number 18 on my list. Maybe this is a little too low for some people, but A Star is Born is 18 on my list. I think Bradley Cooper did a great job with it. I was surprised by how good a job he did all the way around. You know, acting, he's terrific in it. It's a great performance. The music that he co-wrote is great, and he directed the hell out of it. It was one of the biggest surprises of the year for me. I'm not as crazy about the movie as a lot of people are. I mean, obviously I'm including it in my top 20, but I thought everything was really great. I was surprised by how much I liked Lady Gaga. I've never been a fan. But she's terrific in the movie, and it's a story that's been told 8,000 times, and in some crazy way, Bradley Cooper found a freshness to it. I mean, we've seen this movie. I mean, obviously, it's been made 4 times, and
just under that title.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's been made 4 times as A Star is Born, but the story's been told 70,000 times, mm-hmm. and yet there's a real... a sense of newness to the way he tells the story here, and all the performances are great. Sam Elliott is just tremendous as his brother, and I mean he did it. Bradley Cooper did it. He's a hell of a filmmaker, and right out of the gate he makes a pretty terrific movie. So, Star is Born, number 18 on my list.
Yeah, I like that movie. It's not on my list, but I just want to say I really did like that movie a
okay.
lot. My number 18 is a movie that's still at the Music Box if you want to check it out. It's called Shoplifters. This is from Hirokazu Koreeda, who does, you know, these really like low-key family dramas that kind of take a while to set up and to get going. He's kind of like Mike Lee in that respect. Not as dark as Mike Lee, but definitely, you know, his movies just kind of had this wonderful like rhythm to them, that where you just get absorbed in the characters and these situations. And it's about this family of pickpocketers and shoplifters who, you know, take in this little girl who comes from a bad family, and they just kind of adopt her without really officially adopting her. And eventually the family who lost her starts looking for her, you know, on TV and, you know, going public and everything like that. But even though they're not good parents, but it's a really heartbreaking movie, especially the last half hour. They kind of all the tables get turned in the last half hour, and it's just it's kind of devastating. But it really stuck with me for a while after I saw it. This is a great year for foreign language films, and it was hard to kind of narrow down, you know, a few that I wanted to put on my list, but Shoplifters, I think, is really a wonderful movie, and people should go see it.
Okay. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Eric, it'll be time for your number 18, and we'll do a quick recap as well. We're going to break here for the news on 720 WGN, and when we come back, more of the best and worst of 2018. Right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. One of the best scores of the year. This is from First Man. I think there is a theme here of movies that nobody went to see.
Yes.
particularly a painful one right here for First Man, which mm-hmm. you know, more people should have seen. There's just no question about it. It's our annual let's talk about the movies of the year movie show. And it's Eric Childress is here, Colin Suter. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
And we are going through our favorite movies of the year. Let me quick recap. Number 20 on my list is Bad Times at the El Royale. 19 is Annihilation. 18, A Star is Born. Colin?
Number 20, Bodied. Number 19, The Endless. Number 18, Shoplifters.
Okay. And?
And my number 20 was Welcome to Marwen. My number 19 was Small Town Crime. And my number 18 matches with one of you.
Uh-oh.
Ooh, which one is it? Which one is it? It's A Star is Born. Number 18 is A Star is Born. Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you, Nick, about this. I think the first 45 minutes of this movie are just about perfect. I think everything leading up to the performance of Shallow in the film, performance that gives me goosebumps each time that I've seen it. I think the setup of this movie and the courtship and the romance at the beginning is really terrific. The second half isn't as great for me, but it still holds true because of the performances. This is, you know, old school classic filmmaking here from Bradley Cooper, taking a classic story and making it and modernizing it, like you said, finding a fresh approach to it. The cinematography in this movie are fantastic, and you know we joked about Bohemian Rhapsody winning Best Picture because it is a joke, but if you look at the performance scenes in A Star is Born and compare them to the performance scenes of Bohemian Rhapsody, there's absolutely zero comparison. Right now we're given a better performance than Bohemian Rhapsody does, but A Star is Born is my number 18.
Okay. Number 17 on my list is Burning, which is a fascinating, fascinating movie. I'm sure we're going to hear more about it. I have a feeling we're going to hear more about it. I'm not going to be the first person. This is a Korean film. It's a hard movie to talk about. It's a hard movie to describe. The less you say about it, I think the better, because the less that you know about it, about what's going on. I mean, the simplest of terms is a guy is asked to watch Cat. And a woman comes back from a trip and brings a sort of a mysterious dude with her, and that's about all I want to say. It's a long movie, but you're enveloped in it. This is a movie that really grabs you, and it has a real sort of hypnotic quality to it. And it's beautifully made. Like it's a beautifully directed film with terrific performances from everyone involved, and I'm. Like I said, I know I'm not going to be the only person that mentions this movie. But so that's number 17 on my list is Burning.
Almost made my list.
Oh,
almost.
Oh.
You might be wrong, Nick.
Oh, okay.
No, but and that's a great film. And my number 17 is, again, after this one, my movies will sound a little more familiar, I promise. But I caught up with this one last week, a movie called Monsters and Men. Directed by Ronaldo Marcus Green, who did a short film called Stop that I programmed a few years ago, and this is his feature debut, and it's a really, we've seen a lot of great movies this year about, you know, about race, about you know, cop killings and things like that, and you know, movies that are meant to get the conversation started, and a lot of them have been really great, and I'm gonna have a few more on my list too. This one, I thought, took a really interesting approach in that it starts telling the story of a kid who witnesses a cop, you know, killing a black person on, you know, by next to, you know, selling cigarettes or something like that. You don't really see the killing. That's the interesting thing. But this kid films it with his phone, and we kind of see what happens to him, the repercussions of that. And then the story shifts to a cop who was there, and we see the cop's point of view of everything. And so it's not all black and white. It's the whole movie is just exists in a gray area, so that you're kind of angry and you're kind of conflicted and you're kind of seeing things in many different perspectives. And I just thought it was really beautifully done, and it kind of stuck with me. Just the impact of it and the approach to the storytelling, that it wasn't making obvious choices with the story. Not everything is easily resolved. And, just thought that was an interesting approach from a director who is, really made a startling statement with this movie. So, and it's one I think more people should see. So
okay.
It's Monsters and Men, and it comes out on DVD this week. So.
All right. Okay. All right, Eric, what do you got?
My number 17 is probably the biggest surprise I had in the theater this year. and it was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. For all this time, knowing that this movie was coming out, I was like, why Sony is just going to milk the Spider-Man franchise for as much as they possibly can. Do we really need this? Do we really need another version of the story? Had nothing to do, obviously, with who's the central character. Just why do we need another version of it now while we're still telling another story? And this movie is just it's beautiful. It is hilarious. It is gorgeous to look at. Struck by the singular animation style that the movie begins with is something that I had not quite seen before on a big screen presented in this way. It's a great adventure story. It has a great story to it. It's full of self-referential humor. Lord and Miller get attached to it, and obviously their fingerprints are in it. But it feels like, in that Lego movie kind of style where, they throw a lot at the wall and all of it sticks. And it was so much fun to watch. Truly one of the big surprises of the year for me.
Almost made my list. Mm. Didn't quite make it. But I was incredibly surprised by that movie. And like you said, I mean, who expected, I honestly, when I first saw the trailers for it, I was like, "This is how come this isn't going straight to video? What are we talking about?"
You're right.
Yeah. And then it's a really entertaining movie. Just didn't make it. Okay, number 16 on my list is Paul Schrader's First Reformed, which features a great performance by Ethan Hawke. And it's a dark it's Schrader. It's the kind of stuff that Schrader, this is like, it's kind of like, Schrader going back to his greatest hits, which is fine, because when he does his greatest hits well, he does it better than a lot of people on the planet. And this is his best movie in years. And I think maybe Ethan Hawke's best performance of his career. It's fascinating stuff. It's about a minister who goes into upstate New York, and I don't want to give too much away, but there's a lot going on here, and it's the kind of themes that Schrader has talked about before. It's a heady movie too. Like when it's over, you're going to talk about it. If you know what I mean, there are going to be some conversations about the world after you see First Reformed. So, Schrader back in full. I mean, what is this? Affliction maybe was the last movie that he did.
That's great. I would say Affliction or Autofocus. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Autofocus.
I'm not a big fan of that one.
Okay.
But I would say this is the best movie since Affliction. Mm. And so that's a long time.
That's 98, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a long time. That's 20 years. Mm-hmm. So a great film. Paul Schrader's best movie in a very, very, very long time. And, it was refreshing to see how well received it was, this movie. And also that Schrader actually hit the road. You know what I mean? And did like a lot of promotion and stuff for us.
Our festival. Obviously,
he was at your festival. So, but anyway, a great, 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 terrific movie. First Reform, that's my number 16. Okay.
My number 16 is The Old Man and the Gun. Just a real treat to see just two of our greatest actors on the screen together, Sissy Spacek and Robert Redford, in a story that is just, I just had a great time just watching it unfold. And just, watching Robert Redford just having so much fun with it. Directed by David Lowery, who's just become one of my favorite directors. I mean, he did a Ghost Story last year and Pete's Dragon the year before that. I mean, this guy's just on a roll, and I can't wait to see what he does next. And this was just a real surprise. I didn't get to see it in the theater. I had caught up with it on a screener, and I just had a really wonderful time just watching these actors and the story.
The stuff between Sissy Spacek and Robert Redford is gold.
Yeah.
I mean, every scene they have together in that movie is phenomenal. It's another one didn't quite make my list. Yeah. But that's, just to watch those two together in those scenes is just a joy to watch them,
Yeah.
A couple of pros, man, doing it.
Yeah.
Yep.
And a tight 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very entertaining stuff. That Lowry's good. He's the deal, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is.
He's the real deal.
Yeah.
No question about it. The stuff that he does is also varying. Like, how different is that from Pete's Dragon and a Ghost Story? Ghost Story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. But anyway, so it was a terrific movie, The Old Man and the Gun.
Yeah.
All right.
My number 16 is Lean on Pete. Andrew Haig, who did 45 years of Charlotte Rampling. This really wonderful story about this boy played by Charlie Plummer who... he just kind of develops this relationship. He has some problems at home, and he develops this relationship with a horse trainer played by Steve Buscemi, and really becomes attached to this horse named Lean on Pete. And he's a quarter horse, he's a racehorse, he's bred specifically for money. You know, Steve Buscemi is not the best guy in the world, but he gives him a job and gives him some purpose. And you know, it's this journey. It's a movie that. You're never quite sure exactly where it's headed. It takes some real dark turns throughout the film, particularly in the second half, some really dark turns. But is ultimately, you know, incredibly satisfying, and one of those movies that really just stuck with me for a few hours right after I'd seen it. Like, I didn't want to almost do anything else because it was just kind of haunting me a bit. But Lean on Pete is my number 16.
All right. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll get into our top 15. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here, and we are talking about the movies of 2018. Lots more to talk about. We got the subcategories and the worst movies of 2018 as well. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN, and we'll return right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Mission Impossible. Fallout. Yeah. It's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up at 5 is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's welcome the guys back. Colin Suter.
Hello.
Eric Childress.
Hello.
We are doing our best movies of the year, as we do every year. Quick recap, and then we'll bust into the top 15. Number 20 for me was Bad Times at the El Royale. 19 was Annihilation. 18, A Star is Born. 17, Burning. 16, First Reformed. Colin?
My number 20 is Bodied. Number 19, The Endless. Number 18, Shoplifters. Number 17, Monsters and Men. And number 16, The Old Man and the Gun.
All right. Eric?
My number 20 was Welcome to Marwen. 19, Small Town Crime. 18, A Star is Born. 17, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and 16, Lean on Pete.
All right. Well, now we're into our top 15, and number 15 on my list is The Death of Stalin, which I think is easily the funniest movie of 2018. And I know we're going to hear more about this one for sure. I figured I ranked it a little bit lower than you guys did, but I laughed my ass off this whole movie, and... why am I blanking on the director's name?
Armando Iannucci.
Yeah. That guy's got his very distinctive style, the way he writes. If you've seen In the Loop, or if he was one of the creators who created Veep on HBO, and he's got a very, very distinctive way of writing. And I remember you told me, Eric, you told me about this one, because you saw it. What festival did you
Toronto.
See? Toronto. Okay, so you saw it in Toronto, and you told me... You know, I mean, the title was The Death of Stalin, then you told me who was in it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell? What? It was like the weirdest concept ever, and still weird.
Yeah.
But just outlandishly funny and really, really smart. And it's the funniest movie of the year. So so that's number 15 on my list is The Death of Stalin, and I know that we'll hear more about that as the time progresses. All right.
My number 15 is a film called The Rider. This is about a guy who, you know, used to do rodeos, but he can't do them anymore because of an injury, and so he's kind of coping with that, and lives with his dad and his sister who has Asperger's, and it's just this a really interesting study of this family. But the really interesting thing about this film, other than that it's beautifully directed and acted, is that the director Chloe Zhao discovered this family and discovered this kind of story on her own, and actually cast the people who inspired it in the film. We've seen that kind of thing go south.
Clint Eastwood,
earlier this year.
Yep.
1517 to Paris. Not quite as good as this one. But there's something about how, in fact, it's terrible.
That's an understatement.
Yeah, I know. I meant it to be an understatement. But there's something about this one where just the Gendro family, I believe is their name, and they so she somehow managed to get this film made this well, this way. Because, and when I watched it, it was weird because I didn't know that story going in. I thought I was watching actors, just like really unknown actors giving really good performances. And then when I heard that this was a story, I was like, you know, that's actually harder to pull off getting that. I mean, that's really amazing thing to accomplish to get it done this well. It is on Stars/Hulu. I don't know how you get it through that if you want to watch it. Worth seeing. It's called The Rider.
Okay. All right, Eric, what's your 15?
My number 15 is Bad Times at the El Royale.
Oh, nice!
yeah. I think this is not just criminally underseen by the public, criminally underappreciated by critics.
Yeah.
You know, when I talked about movies that I think are going to stand the test of time, I think this is one of those movies that's going to be rediscovered in think pieces over the years. Because I think that, you know, people accuse Tarantino of like, oh, well, he just copies from other movies. Yeah, but he takes that and then he massages it into something else and, you know, crafts, you know, a grander story. And that's exactly what
Drew Goddard,
thank you, does with this film. Because this movie is a complete indictment of the 1960s and where America was and what it was doing, what it's still doing in some respects. And I think that when, you know, people who aren't trying to, once they get past to deciphering the mysteries within the story and they start looking exactly at what each of the rooms represent and what the characters represent and who, where they've been and where they're going, I think it's Jeff Bridges' best performance as the Fisher King. I really think that it's the best thing he's done in a long time. It's a great ensemble cast. And
I go Fearless, but that's...
Sure. No, sure. Fine. Still a long time, is my point.
For me, though, I mean, he's good in everything. I like him in everything.
Oh, well, yeah. No, he's the king.
Yeah.
Starman himself, as Chris Pine said tonight.
Yes.
Man. I love him. But no, I think it's a movie that's going to be rediscovered over time. So 15, Bad Times at the El Royale.
Let's see. What do we got next here? Number 14 on my list is Eighth Grade, which is funny and sweet and a breakout performance by who was nominated last night, Elsie Fisher.
Mm-hmm.
And she's wonderful in this movie. A stand-up comedian wrote and directed it and made a great debut with it. It was one of those big surprises. Of the year, kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody expected Bo Burnham to you know come out of the gate with this with something as good as this. And the performance is really, you know, that's the key to the movie. The kid is tremendous in it. She's great. She's got an incredible future. And it's warts and all. That's the thing, man. You know, this is an R-rated movie. And it really captures, I mean, it's called Eighth Grade, and it really captures what it was like to be that age. And it's also universal, because it's not just about a 13-year-old kid, it's about everybody. I mean, anybody out of any age can identify with what happens in this movie, and many of us have lived it, and as seen through the eyes of this terrific actress. It was a really refreshing movie, and very entertaining. Just a very, very entertaining movie, and sweet with a wonderful performance. So, Eighth Grade, number 14 on my list.
My number 14 is, well, it's an awards darling right now. It's If Beale Street Could Talk. This is Barry Jenkins' follow-up to Moonlight. And I think this guy is the real deal. I think this guy gets, you know, amazing performances. It's a really interesting story that you just kind of have hope for, but you know that it's not all going to go down as you'd like it to. It has one of the best scenes of anybody telling their family that they're pregnant that I've ever seen. That scene is just unbelievable. I really was moved by all the performances in it. And I've only seen it the one time at the screening like a month and a half ago, but I really want to see it again. And I like Barry Jenkins' work a lot. And this is I'm just can't wait to see what he does next.
Okay. So. All right, guys, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll come back and we'll hear more from Colin and Eric. We are talking about the movies of 2018. We're doing the best now. We'll do the worst a little later, and we have all of those really fun subcategories to get to. That's all coming up right after we take this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That is from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, which I think we all agree one of the biggest surprises of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Was that movie. Nick DiGilio here. How's everybody doing? It's Monday morning. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And this is the yearly tradition that we have where Eric and Colin are here in studio. And we're going through the best and worst movies of the year. And we were up to... where are we at now? It's you, right, Eric?
I'll be on 14.
You'll be on 14.
Yeah,
okay.
Right.
So let's find out what your 14 is. We'll do a recap afterwards.
Okay. My number 14 is A Quiet Place. John Krasinski had directed a couple movies beforehand, little indie films that played at Sundance. I don't think anyone saw this in him. He created a miracle with this film because he did something that just about no other filmmaker is able to do, and that's to get people to shut up in a movie theater. This movie built on such a wonderfully simple premise, and you know, not many filmmakers can do a movie where there's no spoken dialogue, I think, in like the first 40 minutes of the movie, which is pretty incredible. Great performances from Krasinski and Emily Blunt, as well as the two children play as kids. And, a science fiction horror movie, again, runs very kind of mercifully, 85 minutes, something like that, has a great, ending to it. But a heartfelt film, too, about fathers and parents and their children, but also one of the scariest films of 2018, in A Quiet Place, my number 14.
Okay. All right, my number 13 is Beautiful Boy with Steve Carell and Timothée Chalamet. And Timothée Chalamet is the real deal. He's an incredibly talented actor. And this is a movie, this is a movie based on a true story about a family and a father, most pointedly, trying to deal with the addiction and the problems that his son is having, and that's the core. Of what the movie's about. It's a great it's a movie with great performances. It also understands addiction very well, obviously, since it's based on this guy's real story. But the acting in this movie is just, it's stellar. Everybody from top to bottom is really great in it, and I was just moved by it. I was really, really deeply moved by it. And so that's Beautiful Boy with Timothée Chalamet and Steve Carell. That's my number 13.
All right, my number 13, I'm out of the art house rut right now. We're going to shift over to summer blockbusters. My number 13 is Mission Impossible Fallout. Just a fantastic entry in a franchise that just gets better and better with every film, and that's so rare. And this is, Christopher McQuarrie's his second film, right, in this mm-hmm. franchise, and it's just... we have our subcategories coming up, best action scene. I couldn't decide. I really right. couldn't. I went back and looked at the trailer just to refresh my memory. I didn't have time to watch the movie again, but I was just like, oh, that's pretty great. Oh my God, that's great. I don't know what to do. I don't know. But man, every single scene in this movie is fantastic. I can't wait for the next one, which, I mean, we're five movies?
Six
movies. Yeah, right. It's number six. And I can't wait for number seven, for something that started 20 years ago. That's pretty, pretty amazing. So yeah, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Okay. All right, Eric.
My number 13 is a movie that is not getting the attention that I thought it was going to get now that I did when I saw it back in Sundance in January, and that's Paul Dano's Wildlife. This story based on a book. Zoe Kazan wrote the screenplay with him, and it's his directorial debut. Carey Mulligan and Jake Gyllenhaal have played as husband and wife with a young son, and he loses his job and then goes off to fight the wildfires that are brewing near town, and leaves her alone with their child, and she kind of, you know, is watching these this couple kind of drift apart in different ways. Him kind of going off to discover his manliness, her kind of discovering her womanhood while she's at home, taking charge of her life for the first time in her life. And it's a wonderful movie about sort of this disintegration of this nuclear family that ends on a wonderful final note. Carey Mulligan, I think, is the performance of her career in this movie. I think it's the best thing she's ever done. Gyllenhaal is really good, and I'm really surprised that this movie has not popped up a bit more during award season, particularly Carey Mulligan's performance. But Wildlife is my number 13.
Yeah, it didn't make my list, but she's amazing in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great performance, one of the best performances of the year. There's no question about it. All right, number 12 was mentioned already, and that's my number 12 is A Quiet Place, the John Krasinski directed thriller. Eric spoke eloquently about it. It is I have to say, I saw the film twice in the theater. Could hear a pin drop. You could hear a pin drop. It was just and it was, you know why? Because it's such an effective movie that, like, as an audience member, you don't want to make any noise in case you get the characters killed.
Yeah.
That's because you care so much about these characters. Yeah. And it's a really beautifully simple setup. Great performances all the way around. The kids are fantastic. Emily Blunt is so good in this movie. And there's a birth scene. It is the year of birth scenes. There's some pretty unbelievably brutal birth scenes.
Yes.
Seems to be a theme this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary. It's really tightly done. There's also, one of my favorite emotional moments in the year is in a Quiet Place, and it involves Krasinski late in the film. There's a moment. It's just like, you know, it just takes your breath away.
I love that moment.
Yeah, I think it's the best moment in the entire film. And and it came out of nowhere. You know, like you said, he directed a couple of crappy movies that were independent, and then here's this thing.
Yeah, sorry, John.
And he's great. You know, this was a big surprise, and it was a really scary movie and beautifully done. So that's my number 12 is A Quiet Place.
My number 12 is kind of a franchise that is taking me by surprise, but it's another sequel, and that's Paddington 2. This movie reminds me, and I don't get to say this very often, but it reminds me of George Miller's Babe, Pig in the City, just in terms of its art direction. Just the frame is filled with these very colorful sets, very just outlandish designs, and it's a lot of sequences that are very much in the same vein of that movie, where it's just like, how did they come up with this? You know, this sequence of just cataclysmic events that build up to this final moment. And it's got really just it's got a movie with a big heart. I mean, I like this one a lot. I like this one more than the first one. Not a lot more, but more than the first one, because it was Nicole Kidman was the villain in the first one, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not that interesting. Hugh Grant, a lot of fun.
He had a good year, Hugh Grant.
Yeah, very good year.
He's in the English
television show.
The very English scandals. He was great in that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good year for Hugh Grant.
Yeah, and he's having a lot of fun in this. And I love all the prison stuff. It's really funny. And this is just one of those movies that... kind of like Won't You Be My Neighbor, which I might get mentioned later on, I don't know, but it's, you know, just that kind of movie that just makes you feel really good, and you kind of need that right now. Paddington 2 is my number 12.
All right, Eric.
Nick, you were right, because my number 12 is Burning. So you're right, it was going to come back today. And you know, watching this movie the first time, like you said, it is a long movie. It's a 2.5-hour film. And you know, watching it, not quite sure where it was going. You didn't want to say too much about it, but anyone who's ever been in that position where you're in love with someone who seems to reciprocate that love, and then she brings another guy into the equation, that's painful for about an hour in this movie. But this movie shifts around to exactly who you think is the good person. I think there's a key moment in midway through this movie when things really shift, that thing is absolutely devastating. It involves something that the main character says to the girl before she gets into a car. And that scene stuck with me for days. after I saw the film. And on top of it, it is an incredibly creepy little thriller. Stephen Yeun, who plays the guy that she brings home, is one of the most mysteriously despicable characters of the year. And it's a movie that deals with class. It's a movie that deals with real, you know, complicated emotions. And it is a film that, you know, it took, you know, watching it was, you know, kind of like, where is this going? 2.5 hours? Get me here. And when, by the time it did, I was thinking about it for like the next 72 hours. So Burning stuck with me for a long time and probably will continue to for some time. My number 12.
All right. All right, Eric, Colin, hang on. Mm-hmm. All right. These guys are hanging out here. We're talking about the best movies of 2018. Got a lot more to talk about. We got all our subcategories and the worst, too. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. And we're going to take a break. And when we come back, more movie talk about 2018 after this. Hey, it's the best part of the movie.
For you, Nick.
Yeah, the score. Best part of that movie. And it's an updated score, too. Carpenter did a great job with it. Mm-hmm. Movie sucked.
Yeah.
That was the reboot of Halloween, which made a lot of money. Inexplicably, and I hated it. So, anyway, welcome back, everybody. You will hear the title of that movie again later on, but not in a good way. Let's do a recap here. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here, and we're talking about the best movies of 2018. I'll give you mine so far. Number 20, Bad Times at the El Royale. Number 19, Annihilation. Number 18, A Star is Born. 17, Burning. 16, First Reformed. 15, The Death of Stalin. 14, Eighth Grade. 13, Beautiful Boy. 12, A Quiet Place. All right, Colin.
Number 20, Bodied. Number 19, The Endless. Number 18, Shoplifters. Number 17, Monsters and Men. Number 16, The Old Man and the Gun. Number 15, The Rider. Number 14, If Beale Street Could Talk. Number 13, Mission Impossible Fallout. Number 12, Paddington 2.
All right, Eric.
Number 20, Welcome to Marwen. 19, Small Town Crime. 18, A Star is Born. 17, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. 16, Lean on Pete. 15, Bad Times at the El Royale. 14, A Quiet Place. 13, Wildlife. And 12, Burning.
All right. Now we're getting into number 11 on my list is Black Klansman, which is Spike Lee's best movie in years. Massively entertaining. Really great performances all the way across the board. It's very funny at times, you know, based on a true story about a black cop who infiltrates the KKK using his white partner, played by Adam Driver. Based on a true story, it's a period piece in the 70s, so Spike has a lot of fun with the music and the hair and the clothes and all that stuff. Very entertaining movie, and then the last 10 minutes is like repeatedly punched in the gut. Really one of the most devastating last 10 minutes of any movie this year. And the terrifying thing is it was real footage. That's the
mm-hmm.
that's
yeah.
the thing. So entertaining movie, lots of fun, and then a punch in the gut, and all of it is good. It's the best thing Spike Lee's done in a very, very long time. So, Black Klansman, number 11 on my list.
Well, we have a match. My number 11 is also Black Klansman. I agree with everything you said. And sometimes, and this is also an understatement, Spike Lee can go overboard.
you think?
And, you know, just he misses the mark by, you know, aiming too directly at it. But this time, I think he really just nailed everything perfectly. He got a great cast. Adam Driver is fantastic in this movie. John David Washington is excellent. They changed some things around from the story, but I don't care. This is a terrific movie that, special mention to Topher Grace for taking on a role that a lot of actors would never have the guts to take.
And he's great in it.
And he's fantastic as David Duke.
Yep.
And he made David Duke mad, so good for him for that, too. Black Klansman, not my number 11.
All right. All right, Eric.
My number 11, and I think in all the years we've been doing this, I can't think of another time when number 11, it pained me to put this movie at number 11 because I was so sure it was going to make my top 10 list. And this is almost like a 10B for me. But it has been mentioned already, and it's The Rider, Chloe Zhao's film, which I thought was just a beautiful piece of work the first time I saw it. And I watched it again just this past week. And it's a movie about a very specific culture, about riding and horse training and bull, riding, and not a culture that everyone understands and sometimes can be mocked, sometimes can be associated with a certain type of voter, shall you say. But this movie's not about making judgments on any of these characters. There's a familiarity about being knocked down and so desperately wanting to get up when everything in the world is telling you not to, and maybe you shouldn't, which is a tough thing to come by. And Brady Jandro, there's scenes in the movie between him and another former writer named Lane Scott, who is now paralyzed and disabled because of a writing incident. And the scenes between the two of them in the movie are absolutely genuinely beautiful, heartbreaking. The score of this movie is magnificent. And just, the end of this movie, again, I was in tears watching it. I think it's a magnificent piece of work, and I really hope more people discover it. It's called The Rider.
Okay. All right, we're getting into the top 10 now, so here we go. These are the top 10 movies of the year, according to us. My number 10 is Widows. I'm so pissed that nobody saw this movie. I you know what I mean? It's so good. It's so good, and the cast is so great, and it was shot here. Viola Davis and Michelle Rodriguez and why am I blanking out? Elizabeth Debicki. Play these widows of these guys who planned a bank robbery and ended up getting killed, and so that they are going to go through with this heist. So on the simplest of levels, it's just a great heist movie. Steve McQueen wrote and directed it. I've never been a big fan of his work in the past, but this just, he knocked it out of the park. It's a great heist movie. It's a really interesting movie about politics as well and about this city. Colin Farrell, fantastic in it. All the performances are great, all the way across the board. And Viola Davis is just, she's the best. Great use of the city. My friend Steve Walker's in it. and I just, I'm really surprised that this movie didn't catch on with audiences, because it's a real crowd pleaser as far as I'm concerned. It's anchored by great performances. It's really beautifully made. It's exciting, and it's unpredictable. And I'm so mad that nobody saw this movie. I just can't believe it, because it's just so damned entertaining and good. So I'm frustrated by this, the lack of success from Widows, but it's my 10th favorite movie of the year. So, all right.
My number 10 is a movie that has popped up on a lot of critics' lists, and it's been winning awards for Best Documentary, 1 Hour Award for Best Documentary. And it's a movie called Minding the Gap. Chicago filmmaker named Bing Liu, his movie's about him and his friends, who are these, skateboarding goofballs, many years ago, and he's kind of catching up with them, and like 10 years later. And it's really, when I watched it, and I watched the kind of the movie being set up as a movie about these skateboarding people, I was like, oh no, not another one. I was like, after Skate Kitchen in mid-90s, I was like, I don't need another skateboarding movie. But and then I got sucked right into it, though, with the people in it and their stories. And it's about, the people you grow up with, and then you kind of have to stop growing up with them, and then you catch up with them, and it's like, well, have we grown that much? And have we, do we still have more growing up to do? And there's all these revelations that come out among the three of them. And it's just, I got sucked right into the drama of this thing, and it turned out to be much more than a skateboarding movie. I definitely think people should check it out. It's on Hulu right now. And it's called Minding the Gap.
Minding the Gap, okay. Yeah. All right, number 10 for you, Eric?
My number 10 is Paddington 2. You know, Colin, you know, rightly compared this to George Miller's Big Pig in the City. I would even take it another step further and say I would compare it to some of the best of Pixar's films, because this movie feels at times like a live-action Pixar film. The director of the film, why am I blanking on the...
Paul King.
Paul King. I was going to say Pete King. Paul King, yes. This guy is the real deal. This guy who's done both of these Paddington films has such an eye for art direction and ingenuity and special effects and the way he integrates all of them into the story. Paddington is so unbelievably charming as a character. This movie has slapstick, humor, the great characters throughout. His family is great. Hugh Grant, a great, hilarious addition to this movie, has a beautiful final payoff to the movie. The train chase at the end of the movie, again, ranks up there with some of the best Pixar chases.
Yeah.
You know, I'm watching this movie again, which I watched actually this very morning, and thinking about movies that I most want to show to my nieces as they're growing up. I recently showed them Who Framed Roger Rabbit. This would be the next movie that I show them. Paddington 2 is my number 10.
All right, we're going to break here, and we'll come back. We'll jump right back into it. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here. We're wrapping up the movie year of 2018. We're doing the best now, then we'll do the worst, and we've got subcategories coming up as well. And we'll continue right after we take this break here on 720 WGN. This has got to be... This has got to be song of the year, right?
Best original song, yeah.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Won the Golden Globe last night.
Won the Golden Globe last night.
Yeah, I don't see there's any way.
There's no way.
Mm-mm.
No way. That's from A Star is Born. That's Shallow. And Eric Childress is here. Colin Suter is here. And we're going through our favorite movies of the year. And we are into our top 10 right now. We're on number 9. So let me continue, and then we'll do a recap in a little bit to remind everybody what our favorites are so far. My number 9 is Mission Impossible Fallout, which is without question the best action movie of the year. And like you, Colin, you know, the whole, like, what's your favorite action scene of the, I don't know, all of it.
Yeah.
Right.
The whole movie. I've watched it now, you know, I've watched it a few times at home, and just sometimes I just go back and watch certain sequences, and it's the only time I've ever liked Henry Cavill. Only time. I've never liked him in anything else, but I love him in this. And that fight scene in the bathroom, I don't even know. I mean, it's just insane. Ugh. And it's so beautifully directed. McQuarrie has just become like an action. I mean, he's just the man now.
Yeah.
And that kind of comes out of nowhere. I mean, he directed...
The Wave. If you watch The Wave of the Gun...
I haven't seen A Wave of the Gun in a long time.
Go back and look at that movie. Now.
I mean, I liked it. I remember liking it, but I just...
The shootout at the end of that movie is fantastic.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and watch. To go back and watch that one again. I remember liking it, and I remember loving Juliette Lewis in it.
Mm.
For me, she was the best thing in the movie. But no, this McQuarrie is the man, and I, you know, like you guys, man, I can't wait. I want one of these every year.
Yeah,
and Tom Cruise is not aging.
No,
he's never going to age.
No, he's got to deal with the gods.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah,
the Thetans, man.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
He goes all in these movies too. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, it's pretty well known that he's insane, and he does some really insane stunts, including you know a bunch of stuff in this movie. Busted his ankle.
That they seem to leave it in the movie.
Yeah,
that moment.
Yeah, and I mean the action scenes in this movie are imaginative. They're beautifully directed. It's an exciting movie. You know the plot is it's a I don't care. I mean it's like all right we've seen this kind of movie 9,000 times and yet there's a real freshness to it. They killed off a character I was very upset about.
So was my mom.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was not happy.
No.
I was not happy at all that they killed off that character. It was like, no! You know, it was like when Gary Busey got killed in Point Break. You go, no! these movies are great. And, you know, I saw it in IMAX, and that's the way to see it. The helicopter sequence, at the end was shot in IMAX.
Yep.
And it's just breathtaking and so exciting and... Yeah, best action movie of the year, and it's number 9 on my list, Mission Impossible Fallout, a great movie.
My number 9 was a movie that you mentioned earlier, and that's Alex Garland's Annihilation. Watched it again yesterday, and it's because I hadn't seen it since February, and I knew I owed it a second look before I did this. So, and it really just shot up there. I mean, everything about it just retained just the creepiness of it. It's thought provoking. You know, just all the stuff about our DNA and, you know, and just how that dictates who we are and what we do. And, but then it's just a beautiful science fiction, you know, creepy alien element to it. And it's like, this is, up there with, you know, a lot of the best thought-provoking science fiction that we've seen lately, like the Blade Runner movie from last year and Arrival from a couple years ago, and Ex Machina, of course, from the same director. This is just great science fiction. It's, strangely enough, not the creepiest movie on my top 10 list, but in any other year it might have been. But it's definitely a movie that really just holds up beautifully on the second viewing.
It's funny, I'm looking at my list. There's a lot of creepy stuff on
there. Is, right? Yeah.
I'm just realizing that right now.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right.
And did you see, did anybody see Border? Talk about creepy.
No.
Oh, okay.
No,
man. Talk about birth scene.
Oh, really?
God. Yeah. Oh, check out Border sometime.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
All right, Eric.
Okay. Well, my number 9 is Paul Schrader's First Reformed, which, you know, if this movie, he had released this movie in like the early 90s, it would have been like, yeah, that's Paul Schrader. That's what we expect. But, you know, he's been, you know, kind of out in the weeds a bit. He's made some Nicolas Cage movies, for God's sakes. But this feels, you know, it's themes that he's covered before, but with a new world approach to it. You know, this movie about a priest dealing with global warming, essentially, or climate change, whatever you want to call it. And it's a real deep, dense look at a man who is, you know, feeling at the end of his ropes, is not quite sure. He's got a lot of baggage, you know, before he even became a priest, and the way he is sort of rediscovering himself through the lens of wondering about whether or not God put us here to destroy his creation. There's really amazing, thought-provoking stuff in this movie. And I agree with you, Nick, I think this is Ethan Hawke's best performance in a career full of really solid ones. He is stellar in this movie and carries this movie from front to back. I remember walking out. I saw it for the first time at our festival, actually, and I walked out of the movie, and all I said was, yikes, because the last 10 minutes of this movie are, they're creepy and rough, and there's some debate about exactly what exactly happens during those last 10 minutes, so it's thought-provoking in that respect, too. It's a movie that, again, it resonates and it sticks with you, and you keep thinking about it and makes you think about your own faith and your own place in God's world, whatever God that might be. A real powerful film, First Reform, number 9.
Okay. All right, we're moving up here. My number 8 is First Man. I'm so sick about the, like Widows, the mishandling of this movie, the underwhelming response it got from a lot of people. This is the movie about Neil Armstrong, and it's Ryan Gosling and Claire Foy are in it, and it's Damien Chazelle directed it, and it's beautifully made. It's exciting. It is, Gosling is both of the main performances, or all the performances are really strong and really great. And it was fun to see old child actors as adults, because there's like 5 of them in the movie. It's a great movie. It's a great movie about the space program. It is exciting. Again, I saw it in IMAX, and the whole walking on the moon sequence, the first of that is amazing. There is an emotional moment that I didn't expect. I didn't expect to bawl my eyes out during First Man, but I did. And it for me, it's got one of the biggest emotional payoffs of any movie this year. And terrific performances all the way around. And I think the accuracy. They had people from NASA working on this movie. Chazelle went out of his way to make sure that it was as realistic and as accurate as possible, and you can tell that. And I'm just sad that nobody went to see it. We talked about this. Universal screwed up big time.
They blew it.
And they had Halloween, and they were more concerned, I think, about that than they were about.
And they underestimated A Star Is Born.
Yeah, they underestimated A Star Is Born is correct. And so, yeah, it's really, you know, I hope people catch up with this movie and they do see it, but you missed out by not seeing it on the big screen. This is a movie that was made to be seen on the big screen and the biggest screen possible. Really underrated, underseen, great movie. So my number eight is First Man.
My number eight is a movie Eric mentioned, Lean on Pete, Andrew Haig's drama about a boy who, is kind of... The poster for this movie is very misleading. I mean, it looks like a boy and his horse. You know, it looks like that kind of movie. You know, a boy whose life is, you know, he needs a change or he's going to go in the wrong direction. He meets his horse and it changes him forever. Okay, the little section of the movie is that. But not all of it. You can't predict what happens in this film. What happens to this kid? And it's heartbreaking. It's sad. It's beautiful. I mean, because it's one of those movies you feel like you're eavesdropping in on these very private moments. Steve Buscemi's in it. He's great. And it was really one of those movies that really stuck with me after I saw it. It took me by surprise. It's just one of those things that just holds up every time I see it. Lean on Pete. Definitely. People should check that one out.
All right. Eric?
My number eight is Widows. Steve McQueen's Widows. Talk about mismanaged films. And Fox did not seem to know what they had. And, you know, this movie is dense with a lot of different things. I mean, they could have marketed it, you know, as people who have seen it, you know that's not just about the heist, although that's the prevailing thing, you know, plot device in the movie. And they could have marketed this as, you know, a grittier Ocean's 8, and they didn't seem to know how to do that. But, you know, it's a movie that deals with politics, it deals with race, it deals with women in a man's world, you know, all these kind of things, and weaves them together beautifully. I mean, this is a crackerjack movie. Absolutely crackerjack. Even scenes that are just politics and, you know, dividing up, you know, the districts and the, you know, the alderman stuff and whatnot is all fantastic. And, you know, they talk about, you know, kick-ass ensembles, you know, I mean, all the women that you mentioned. Elizabeth Debicki, probably not going to get an Oscar nomination. I think it's one of the biggest crimes of the year, as far as I'm concerned, because she's magnificent in this movie. But you also got Daniel Kaluuya, you got Liam Neeson, you got Brian Tyree Henry, and what a great year he's had. Yeah. There are a lot of really great movies with perfect endings, and this movie had one of those. And it's a layered movie. You know, not everyone is good, not everyone is evil. The movie that asks the question, you know, can you, you know, be moral if you're trying to do the right thing? And I think that resonates throughout the movie. And I've seen it twice, and I think it's great. Widows.
Yeah, terrific movie. Okay, guys, hang on. We're gonna take a break, and when we come back, more of the best movies of 2018 with Eric Childress and Colin Suter right here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Another movie that I was disappointed with the reception of. I'm one of the few people, I thought it was terrific. That was from Solo, A Star Wars Story. I thought that movie was very entertaining. I liked it a lot. I don't know what the hell. So it's Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Eric Childress, Colin Suter are here, and we're wrapping up the year of 2018, giving you the best movies. And coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. All right, let's get back to it. Let's do a recap real quick for people who want to hear what we got going so far. I'll take it from number 20, Bad Times at the El Royale, Annihilation, 19, 18, Star is Born, 17, Burning, 16, First Reformed, 15, The Death of Stalin, 14, Eighth Grade, 13, Beautiful Boy, 12, A Quiet Place, 11, Black Klansman, 10, Widows, 9, Mission Impossible Fallout, 8, First Man. All right, Colin.
Number 20, Bodied. Number 19, The Endless. Number 18, Shoplifters. Number 17, Monsters and Men. Number 16, The Old Man and the Gun. Number 15, The Rider. Number 14, If Beale Street Could Talk. Number 13, Mission Impossible Fallout. Number 12, Paddington 2. Number 11, Black Klansman. Number 10, Mining the Gap. Number 9, Annihilation. Number 8, Lean on Pete.
All right, Eric.
My number 20, Welcome to Marwen. 19, Small Town Crime. 18, A Star is Born. 17, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. 16, Lean on Pete. 15 Bad Times of the El Royale, 14 A Quiet Place, 13 Wildlife, 12 Burning, 11 The Rider, 10 Paddington 2, 9 First Reformed, and 8 Widows.
All right, now we're moving up. My number 7 is Green Book, which I think is one of the most absolutely entertaining movies of the year, featuring two of my favorite performances of the year. These two guys are unbelievable. Based on a true story about a black musician going through the South in the early 60s, being driven by a white guy played by Viggo Mortensen, and it's about their relationship and about, you know, the race issues, the class issues of that time. One of them, I think, just one of the flat out most entertaining movies of the year. The scenes between the two, between Ali and Mortensen, are some of my favorite scenes of the movie year. It was also my dad's favorite movie of the year. Was Green Book. But I thought this movie all the way around, just great performances, really, really interesting story, great ending. Another one of those movies that has like sort of a great like final great final moment. And I just thought it was great, and you know, and Peter Farrelly, directed it without his brother, and it won Best Picture Comedy.
It did win Best Picture Comedy.
Yeah, last night. Yeah, it won Best Picture Comedy, and yeah. So anyway, I thought it was very entertaining and really great. So my number 7 is Green Book.
My number 7 is, I'm going to make this quick because I'm pretty sure I have the lowest. I have it at the lowest on my list. My number 7 is Hereditary, Ari Aster's debut film. It's quite a debut. It's very, very interesting. I'll let you guys. You got this.
Colin, yeah. Are you betting that is going to be higher on Nick and my list?
Maybe that's we'll do.
It's a hefty bet there.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Okay. My number 7 is If Beale Street Could Talk, Barry Jenkins' film, a movie that is just, I mean, the whole movie is just so melancholy. And I think, I haven't read Baldwin's book, but I think captures what I have read about Baldwin and what I know about his voice. I think captures it in such a beautiful way. It feels like kind of an early Spike Lee film, but it has very distinct Barry Jenkins style to it. A movie that, for all intents and purposes, is a kind of a depressing story to live through. But in the center of it is this love story that, as depressing as it can be at times, is a movie that this love just keeps shining through through the middle of it. And even though it's not a very hopeful film for the black race at that time, but that people, connections of people, and that maybe that there is hope for the future. Maybe there is hope for another generation if we can somehow channel this love of this couple into a bottle and show it to people, that maybe things can get better. For people, that, there's a key scene involving Dave Franco, of all people, where he just kind of looks at them wanting to buy this apartment and just, says to them, just like, my parents just taught me love. And if people just tuned into that, then maybe that everything else would be, we could all live in a better place. I think it's a beautiful movie, great score. One of my favorite sequences of the year is the scene where they tell the family about the pregnancy. I adore that scene for so many reasons. Beautiful film. Regina King won the Golden Globe last night. She might win the Oscar, and well-deserved. Beale Street Could Talk is my number 7.
Okay. My number 6 is Welcome to Marwen. I don't even know what to say here. I don't understand the reception that this movie is getting. I don't understand all the Zemeckis bashing. This is a terrific movie based on a true story about a guy who was beaten within an inch of his life for being different, and recovers with no memory of what he used to do. He used to be a designer or an artist, a really great artist, and in order to work through this, he creates this world called Marwen, in his yard, populated with these dolls that are inspired by his friends and people that he knows in the town. And he takes pictures of them, and his artwork becomes, you know, a very, very popular, and there's a gallery opening, and it's about, Steve Carell plays the main character. I think it's, you know, it's wonderfully imaginative in the way that so many Robert Zemeckis movies are. It's beautifully made. It's very emotional. I think there are some really wonderful and beautiful moments in this movie. There's a moment where Steve Carell actually proposes to Leslie Mann, which is one of the most painful and sort of beautiful moments in the movie that just destroyed me. It's a nice reunion with Steve Carell and Leslie Mann. She doesn't throw up on him in this
no
one.
No French toast.
No. No. Yeah, they're really terrific in the movie. I just think it's beautifully made in the way that Robert Zemeckis makes a movie. The special effects are fantastic. The creation, the world of Marwen is beautifully realized. All the female characters are kick-ass, and they're really strong female characters. And I just don't understand why people are so down on this movie. I just don't get it. I think it's one of the best movies I've seen all year. And so, I, you know, and you ranked it at number 20.
20, yeah.
Yeah. I
didn't want you to be alone.
Yeah, I know. I knew. I figured I'd be alone, you know. But and as high as I ranked it, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I put it at number 6. That's how much
I'm definitely going to watch it again.
It's a great movie. And I don't care what anybody says. And Robert Zemeckis is the man. He's just the man. Okay. All right, Colin?
My number 6 is a movie that, you know, I love putting movies near the top of my list that surprise me. And usually like a movie that I have low expectations of, or a movie that just I don't gravitate towards, and it just like completely blows me away. And that movie this year was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I'm an animation lover, and I towards the end of the year I was like, man, this year kind of sucked for animation. What's going on? You know, I like Incredibles 2, but I want something else to, you know, be excited about for animation this year. And it's like, well, I guess it's just going to be one of those years. And this just came out of nowhere. This was like, oh my God, this movie like saved animation for me this year. I mean, it just leaps off the screen. It combines so many different animation genres. You got pop art, you got Warner Brothers, you got anime, you got Pixar, you got photorealism, like all in the same shot at times. And it's just phenomenal, and the characters are fun, and it's really funny, and you know, the Lord and Miller stamp is on there, and that's great. But there's a real heart in this film. I love the message behind it. Anyone can wear the mask, and it's just I love that this movie just kind of came in at the last minute and just like made the year that much better. Yeah. So my number 6 is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Okay, guys, hang on. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll get more of the best films of 2018 after we break for the news here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. The lovely Emily Blunt. She is
sorry,
lovely.
John.
Yeah, that's from Mary Poppins Returns. She had a good year. And Krasinski, they both had a good year. He's Jack Ryan, too.
Yeah.
So, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're counting down the best movies of the year right now. And we're up to number 6 for Eric, right?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Eric, number 6 on your best list.
Kind of in the same vein of Colin, movies that completely kind of took me by surprise, and a movie that I didn't think I'd ever care about, frankly, is Bodied. The movie that played at our festival. It was a movie that was playing on the festival circuit, started at Toronto the year before. People would come out of this thing and talk about how great, how alive this movie was. And I don't think you can find anyone less interested in battle rap than I am. But this is a movie so cooked into the now and cooked into the kind of watch your mouth rhetoric that we kind of have right now, and this movie that challenges those assertions. Its lead character is not always the hero of the movie. You kind of watch him say things and reveal things about people that are not nice, not to put too fine a point on it. But again, a movie that also deals with racial issues is completely fully alive. I don't think I saw any movie this year that was more alive than this one. Just full of energy for a full 2 hours. And again, I don't care about battle rap, but every single time they went at it, the words just really completely resonated in what they were going, the message that they were going through with this movie. Took me to a place that I didn't think a movie could get me to. More people need to see this, because that type of rhetoric and that kind of, like, you can't say anything anymore. You know, if you step the wrong way, you're over in some respects. And I think this movie challenges that and embraces it at times too. So Bodied is my number six film of the year.
All right. Hitting the top five here. My number five is The Favorite. I love this movie, and it's the latest from Yorgos Lanthimos, who has a very interesting career. He's done some very strange movies, and this is probably the most accessible movie that he's ever made, and it's weird, and it is weird. It's essentially, it takes place in the 1700s, and it's this relationship between the Queen, played by Olivia Colman, who won the award last night for actress in a comedy, and her assistant, Rachel Weisz, and then along comes Emma Stone, who comes into the palace, and the politics begin. The backstabbing begins. It's beautifully shot. It is, I've said that it is like a combination of a Barry Lyndon, Monty Python, and Hammer horror, and all of those things I love, and I really just I think everybody in it is great. The three leads are great. Nicholas Holt is hilarious in the movie as well. It's just I just found it to be very entertaining. I've seen it twice, and I liked it. I even liked it more the second time. I laughed my ass off during a lot of it too, and I just think that the three ladies in the movie are great. And so my number five is The Favorite.
My number five was mentioned, and that was Eighth Grade, which is about the most painfully realistic movie about middle school I think that's may have ever been made, at least maybe since Welcome to the Dollhouse. And this is just a really unique movie in that just how much it gets right, because there are so many stupid movies about middle school just aimed at kids, you know, like your Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and you know, there's a series
called middle school
is another movie. Yeah. Right. And they're just, you know, they're childish and kind of dumb, and their heart isn't in the right place because a lot of them don't even have a heart. This is a movie that just has a big heart, and it just aches throughout most of it. All the stuff between her and her dad is just, I mean, that every
parent. Oh, I didn't mention Josh Charles. I forgot to mention Josh Hamilton.
Yeah.
Josh Hamilton, sorry. Yeah,
yeah, every parent should watch this movie, because it kind of tells you, like, it's not just you. You're not alone. A lot of parents are going through the same thing. And it's very empathetic towards them, and certainly empathetic towards the kids in this movie. Elsie Fisher is fantastic, and I love that Bo Burnham says in interviews, is like, you know, this wasn't me in junior high. This is me now. And I think you have to kind of have that awkwardness in order to understand it and interpret it the way he does in this film. So, yeah, number five is Eighth Grade.
All right. Eric, number five.
My number five has been mentioned twice already. It's Mission Impossible Fallout. I mean, you know, I'm always prone to reward big spectacle movies like this, because I think they're a lot harder to pull off, particularly in the action genre, particularly the sixth film in an action genre, which is unheard of. Not outside of the James Bond film, but these movies have sort of become the staple of action filmmaking right now. McQuarrie, who's, you know, and it's not, I mean, McQuarrie's done the last two, but Brad Bird did the fourth one, J.J. Abrams did a fine one with the third one, but these last two from McQuarrie, and particularly this one, I mean, I didn't think anything was going to top Rogue Nation, and he did it with Fallout. He absolutely did it. You know, everything in this movie, every action scene, I mean, just, my God. I mean, it's that kind of, like, how did they do this? Tom Cruise is a madman. He is one, like, the last true movie star who will do anything. He will earn your ticket, you know, price.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. You know, whatever you want to say about his personal life, that's another thing. We're just talking about the art here, and Mission Impossible Fallout is a work of action art filmmaking.
It's the best action movie since Fury Road. And
yes.
That's,
yeah.
And that's
yes.
saying a lot.
That's high mm-hmm. praise.
That's high praise.
Yes.
But it is the best action movie since Fury Road. No,
yep.
No,
nope.
It's not. All right, we're going to number four. Okay. This is the biggest surprise. This is the biggest surprise for me. My number four is Suspiria. The absolute idea that somebody was going to remake Dario Argento's Suspiria infuriated me. I was so angry just at the idea that this movie existed. I was like, I can't believe they're going to do this. And then I end up loving it. Now, that's like you said, Colin, when you're really surprised by something, because I went in with the lowest expectations you could possibly imagine, and I came out loving this movie. I can't believe I'm blanking on the director's name.
Luca Guadagnino.
Okay. This is unlike anything he's ever done, and especially a lot different than the movie he had last year at this time, which was Call Me By Your Name. It's about as far removed as you can get. Now, here's the idea. The basic premise is the same as Argento's movie. An American girl goes to a dance academy in Germany, and it's run by witches. Okay, so that's it. That's essentially it. Now, Argento's movie doesn't make any sense. I'd be the first to admit it. There is this delirious logic that flies through it that it just, you know, if you're trying to figure out what's going on in the movie and you're trying to understand things like motivation and stuff like that, you're not going to get it. What you're going to get is insanity. And I love Suspiria. It's the scariest movie I've ever seen. What he does here is takes the basic... What the director said that he wanted to make a movie that felt like how he felt when he first saw Suspiria. And I think he achieves that. It's 2.5 hours long. It never drags, in my opinion. I think, and I know you disagree, I think
Dakota Johnson. You can't even remember her name.
Dakota Johnson's great. I always say Dakota Fanning.
That would have been interesting.
But Dakota Johnson is, I think she's great in this. And Tilda Swinton, I know there's like, you know, the stunt casting of having her as an old man. It worked for me. All of it worked for me. She's got three roles in the movie, and she's great in all three of them. I think it's creepy as hell. I think the last 15 minutes is bat crap crazy. And when it was all over, I was like, that's one of the craziest movies I've ever seen. I've seen it like three times now. And I love it. I really do. And like I said, the last person on the planet who expected to like this movie is me. Because from the get-go, when I heard, even when David Gordon Green was attached to it, when they were going to do, then he ended up screwing up Halloween. But I was down on it the whole time, and I think it's great. It's hypnotic, and I love Tom York's score. Oh my God, do I love it. And it's just scary and bloody and nuts, and like I said, the last 20 minutes is crazy. There's a scene where Dakota Johnson is causing another girl in a dance studio to just basically mangle herself.
That seems great. That seems good.
That's like the first scene in the movie where you go, whoa! But no, I loved it. Suspiria, number four. And I never would have... If you would have told me a year ago that the remake of Suspiria was going to be in my top 10, I would have said, shut up.
Okay, Collins, you're the match.
Well, I mean, not a match, but you have a creepy movie at number four. I have a creepy movie at number four. And you might... I know you like this movie, but you might not like that I have it above Hereditary. But this one benefited from a second viewing, whereas Hereditary, I've still only seen once. My number four is A Quiet Place. Which I watched again a couple weeks ago, and you're talking about the experience of watching it in the theater and people being quiet. It's not just in the theater where it happens. I watched this in my living room with my girlfriend who hadn't seen it yet, and I had the lights off, and I projected it on my wall, and about a half hour into it, she leans over and she whispers something in my ear. I'm like, she doesn't whisper during movies.
Right, right.
But she felt like she had to. That's a really like interesting impulse that this movie gives the viewer. I love this movie so much. I just, everything about it, it's perfectly executed. You're just on edge the entire time. And just the final moment of this movie, it just like, I had tears in my eyes at the final moment of this movie when I knew it was coming. And I was like, this is absolutely the perfect way to end this thing. The second viewing of this movie, that's what caused it to shoot up to number four on my list.
Okay, that's A Quiet Place. All right, guys, hang on a second. We're going to break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the best movies of the year. We got the worst, and we got the subcategories as well. Welcome back, everybody. It's from Suspiria, Tom York. And, you know, that movie barely got released. didn't it? I mean, it would, yeah. Am I nuts or what? I mean,
no, Amazon. Yeah, I mean, it had like
Music Box had it.
Music Box had it. It had like when it was only on like two screens. It had like one of the biggest like per theater averages of the year.
Yeah.
When it happened, and then
boom.
Yeah, I mean, like everyone who wouldn't have wanted to see it went and saw
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
And that was that.
Yeah, that was that. Well, that was from Suspiria, mm-hmm. which was number four on my list here, and we're back and we're talking about the best movies of the year 2018. Let's get back to it. We're at Eric.
Number four,
yeah.
And I'm wondering if I can apply the same way you described The Favorite to this movie. I don't know if it's possible, but Barry Lyndon meets Monty Python meets Hammer Horror.
Yeah.
The Death of Stalin. The Monty Python stuff.
Python stuff is in there. Well, yeah. there's Python members in
there. There are Python members in the film. And, I mean, I've seen this movie three times now and had a different experience each time I watched it. The first time, just, you know, amazed at what I knew she was pulling off. The second time, watched it with someone who was not quite as enthused about it. And then I watched it a third time and just watching it by myself, hearing stuff that I had never heard the first two times because either I was laughing so hard or I was trying to pay attention to someone else. There's a lot of overlapping dialogue in this movie, and they're great. There are sides in this movie that are as funny as the best jokes in this movie. Armando Iannucci, again, he's got a style, and I love that style. In the Loop was on my top 10 list that year. Veep, I think, is the best comedy on television. Doing a historical film about the death of a dictator and then the subsequent coup that is going to transpire over that. It's a movie that has a lot of resonance to things that are going on in America today and who's in charge right now. And that stuff absolutely floors me. Steve Buscemi destroys in this movie as Nikita Khrushchev.
Right.
Steve Buscemi as Nikita Khrushchev. Let me just say that again. This movie. He does stuff in this movie. And Jeffrey Tambor Simon Russell Beale, who plays Beria in the movie. They're just every line of this movie. There's something funny about, but it doesn't shy away from real stuff that was going on at this time, including a really really violent ending to it. Seeing this movie, it's the funniest movie of the year and one of the best movies of the year. Number four, The Death of Stalin.
All right, now we're moving up here. Number three on my list I'm sure I'm the only person in the world that would include it this high. Thoroughbreds is number three on my list. One of the smartest and funniest, best acted movies of the year. The two female leads are so great. Great year for Olivia Cook, who was in this and Ready Player One. She was in, I can't remember.
Life Itself.
Right. And she's on a TV show right now she's in Vanity Fair right now on Hulu. So she's great, and I just the byplay between the two girls. It's essentially about these two very troubled teenage girls who plan to murder or to have murdered the abusive stepfather of one of the girls, and enter Anton Yelchin, who is this loser who hangs out with teenagers and does drugs, and they think that this is the best guy to come in and help them with the situation to kill this guy, and obviously it doesn't go very smoothly. I thought it was smart and just, you know, the dialogue was wicked and really funny and it ends on it for me. It ends on it ends on an unbelievably heartbreaking note. To me, the ending of this movie is for me, at least, it was the most devastating thing, for me, the most devastating moment, of any ending of any movie this year. So I loved Thoroughbreds. I really did. And again, is another one that nobody saw. But I think this is one of those movies that will be discovered, I think. And at least gets
playing on cable now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's great. It's a great movie. So that's my number three is Thoroughbreds. All right.
My number three is The Death of Stalin. And, you know, I've been saying for a while now that American comedies are in a bit of a rut right now. Just a lot of them are trying to hit the same beats, appeal to the same audiences, and going for the same kinds of gags. Iannucci's got doing his own thing, and it's beautiful, and I want to see more of it. I just love the whole idea of him, just the casting of it and the execution of it is just totally flies against all logic, and we need more comedies that try to do that kind of thing. We've talked about it a lot, so that's it. My number three is Death of Stalin.
All right, Eric, number three?
My number three is Hereditary, which went in cold at Sundance this year, very cold at Sundance, midnight show, and you want to talk about pin dropping in a movie and sometimes very loud screams in a movie. This movie absolutely delivered. Midnight movies, you know, sometimes a Sundance can be a bit of a chore. And this was a full 2-hour length, this movie. And is one, I mean, there are horror movies and then there are movies that unsettle. This movie unsettles to a degree that It has you in a vice grip for 2 hours, and you know even though it does things that you've probably seen in other movies, but does so with such gusto and such virtuosity, in the way that, you know, Toni Collette, one of the great horror performances of all time, as far as I'm concerned. Not enough credit is given to Gabriel Byrne in this movie, who has to be the straight man in many respects and has to convey the ridiculousness of things that are going on and yet give a performance of how troubled he is of these things that are happening to his family. It's a really strong performance. And the kids in the movie, the stuff that the kids go through, God help you if your kids ever have to go through what these kids go through in this movie. This is, it's beyond a haunted house movie, and I dare you to watch this movie. I dare you to watch it. And if you think the ending is, what can I say? It's leading to that ending. It has to lead to that ending. And in some ways, it's almost a happy ending. In some ways, it is. But not for you, not for the viewer, but for at least one of the characters, maybe. But for the viewer, if you're along for the ride and you believe in what Astor is doing with this film, it will stick with you for a long time. And a second viewing only made that definitive.
Okay. All right. Hang on, guys. We've got to take a break. When we come back, we will talk about the top two movies of the year and then go through the worst and our subcategories, too. All right. Well, we shall return right after this on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. This is from a movie that everybody loved except me. You were never really here with Joaquin Phoenix. It's the movies of 2018, everybody. What we'll do is we'll... we'll do our top, we'll do number two, and then we'll do a full recap, and then give us our number ones. Number two on my list is Hereditary. Everything both of you guys said, it's the scariest movie I've seen in a very, very long time, and it really got under my skin and creeped me out. And all the performances are great, but I got to say, Toni Collette, it is such a great performance, and there's just so much energy that she puts into it. I was exhausted after like three scenes, and I wasn't even doing the acting. She was. It casts a really great spell. It's really scary. It's about a lot of things too. You know, the title itself is what it's really about. And then it doesn't. It has the courage to go completely nuts. I mean, the last 15 minutes of this movie is nuts, but if you're hooked, if you buy the beginning of the movie and you're sort of like emotionally attached, and I was by the end, as crazy as it gets, the payoff is enormous. It's one of the best horror movies in years, and I loved it, and I think it's scary as hell, and I've seen it like three times. Hereditary, and it's scary every time. You never get used to how unnerving this movie is in every possible way. Yeah, really scary stuff. Hereditary, number two on my list. All right.
My number two is Blindspotting. This is, we've talked about Bodied. We've talked about, I talked about Monsters and Men. We talked about Black Klansmen. But this one is my favorite of the movies that kind of tackle race in America racist cops, and just, you know, and this one in particular takes on gentrification as one of its main subjects. And it's also a great male bonding film. I think, Nick, this movie fits with your top five guy movies.
Uh-huh.
I think this is a movie that kind of fits in with that too, because it is also really funny on top of that. There's a scene that where David Diggs has this monologue that is done in verse that just sums up everything about race in America, and you know, just the fear of the other and the fear of you know, the white cops, and you know what that does to people. But at the same time, it's also really kind of an intense experience watching it, because you're on the edge of your seat because the main character, played by David Diggs, he's on probation. He's got 3 days left to not screw up, and his best friend is a loose cannon who could get him in trouble at the drop of a hat, just by hanging out with him. And so you're just constantly on edge, hoping like that he just can make it through these 3 days without anything bad happening to him. But he's growing up. I mean, but he lives in Oakland, and this is where a lot of this kind of thing goes down. And I don't know. I absolutely love every scene in this film. It is really funny. It's really alive. It's really smart. The acting is fantastic. It's directed by Carlos Lopez Estrada. Love to see what he does next. And this is just one of the best movies about living in America today. And it's Blind Spotting.
All right. Number two for you, Eric.
My number two is First Man. A film that was one of my most anticipated films of the year. And, you know, we talked about the marketing of the film and how Universal kind of really blew it. But what we didn't mention is that I think that also the idiotic flag controversy really played into what happened to this film. And the horrible thing about that is that this movie could not be more American. It could not be more about the greatness that this country can achieve when we work together. And that's always been one of my, the profound themes, I think, about movies, about this era and the space program. And now we have kind of a bridge between The Right Stuff, which is one of my favorite movies of all time, and Apollo 13. I think that's kind of this, and in the middle of it, First Man, is kind of the definitive trilogy about the American space program, how it began and how it, in many ways, kind of ended in respects. But it's a film that, even though it's a movie about NASA and about beating the Russians and all that kind of stuff and all the, you know, the things we come to know about this period, and it's about the team and working together and all these different astronauts, you know, doing little pieces along the way, some of them costing their lives as a result of it. And it's ultimately a very personal story about a man who had to go to the moon to forget about a loss,
mm-hmm.
Not to forget, but to reconcile a loss in his personal life. And that moment that you're referring to is devastating.
Yep.
It's absolutely devastating. And the score contributes to that. Damien Chazelle, Ryan Gosling's performance is, you know, Neil Armstrong was always known as kind of a cold fish, and we understand why.
Yeah.
In this movie, we really do, and that's, you know, that's a hard thing to pull off in a movie that's supposed to be about an American hero.
Right.
And this movie is also critical of NASA. It doesn't shy away from any of that stuff. It's a profoundly American story, and it's a shame that people couldn't see through that, if that's the reason why they didn't see it, because they absolutely missed one of the greatest movies of the year.
Yeah. All right. Let's do a recap, and then we got our number ones here. We'll start at. I'll start here. Number 20 for me was Bad Times at the El Royale. Number 19, Annihilation. Number 18, A Star Is Born. 17, Burning. 16, First Reformed. 15, The Death of Stalin. 14, Eighth Grade. 13, Beautiful Boy. 12, A Quiet Place. 11, Black Klansman. 10, Widows. 9, Mission Impossible Fallout. 8, First Man. 7, Green Book. 6, Welcome to Marwen. 5, The Favorite. 4, Suspiria. 3. Thoroughbreds, 2, Hereditary. Colin?
My number 20 is Bodied. Number 19, The Endless. Number 18, Shoplifters. Number 17, Monsters and Men. Number 16, The Old Man and the Gun. Number 15, The Rider. Number 14, If Beale Street Could Talk. Number 13, Mission Impossible Fallout. Number 12, Paddington 2. Number 11, BlacKkKlansman. Number 10, Minding the Gap. Number 9, Annihilation. Number 8, Lean on Pete. Number 7, Hereditary. Number 6, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. Number 5, Eighth Grade. Number 4, A Quiet Place. Number 3, The Death of Stalin. And number 2, Blind Spotting.
All right, Eric.
My number 20, Welcome to Marwen. 19, A Small Town Crime. 18, A Star is Born. 17, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. 16, Lean on Pete. 15, Bad Times of the El Royale. 14, A Quiet Place. 13, Wildlife. 12, Burning. 11, The Rider. 10, Paddington 2. 9, First Reformed. 8, Widows. 7, If Beale Street Could Talk. 6, Bodied. 5, Mission Impossible Fallout. 4, The Death of Stalin. 3, Hereditary. And 2, First Man.
Are we all going to have the same number one?
I thought I was the only one who was going to have this at number one, but I think we do. Or maybe we don't?
You thought that you were going to be the only one to have this at number one?
I thought I knew your number one. I thought I knew your number one. And
you thought my number one was number two.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You thought my number one was number two?
Hereditary.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be your number one.
Oh, well, then maybe it is.
Well, it was until I saw Roma.
Yeah.
Roma.
That's not on your number one?
Roma, number one.
Roma's number one?
Yeah.
Yeah! All three of us, baby!
We did it! Yeah!
Was the last time Lord of the Rings? Was that the last
no,
time?
No, Fury Road.
Oh, Fury Road, of course.
Yes.
Of course.
Please.
Okay.
This is almost as good.
Yeah. No.
Alfonso Cuarón's Roma. Whoa. My God. Okay. I'm going to see it in 70mm.
Me too.
At the Music Box. There's no question there's no way I'm going to miss it because it's got to be seen that way. Mm-hmm. I've seen it on TV. Because it's available on Netflix, which is just, it's not the way to see this movie.
Yeah.
The best way to describe it, it's a autobiographical, semi-autobiographical thing recounting Alfonso Cuarón's childhood in Mexico in the 70s as told through the eyes of a servant who works with this family, and it's basically her story and what happens to her. It is Alfonso Cuarón is the guy's a master. There's no question about it. He's a master, and this is clearly his most personal movie, shot in beautiful black and white by him. He shot it. He edited it. He did it. It's all him.
Everything.
Mm-hmm. And the central performance by
Yalitza Aparicio.
Yeah, who is just amazing in this movie. Mm-hmm. And you're put through the paces in this movie because it's an emotional roller coaster from the beginning. It is gorgeous, it's funny, it's terrifying at times, and really quirky. The handling of the father character is, I think, one of my favorite things in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
There are mesmerizing shots of just cement.
Yeah.
It's like the opening, mm-hmm. the opening credits. I'm like, wow, this is beautiful.
What a cool shot.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just you guys. What, Colin? Go ahead. What do you?
Yeah, I mean, this is you talk about him being a master. I go back and look at all my top 10 lists, and there's been directors who have been at number one more than once. Spike Lee, Peter Weir, among them. But this is the fourth time Alfonso Cuarón has been number one.
Yeah.
On my top 10 list. So,
I think that might be the same case with me.
Yeah, well, for me, it was Little Princess, Children of Men, Gravity, and now Roma.
I think Children of Men and Gravity are both your number one.
Yeah, right. Children of Men and Gravity, and then this.
Both,
yeah. Little Princess is a great film, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it needs a Blu-ray release big time.
Yeah.
But this movie is just, I mean, yeah, you're watching a master at work, and this is what... You know, we think about when we talk about movies as being cinema.
Yeah.
And this is a genuine work of great cinema that is the kind of thing you study in film school, but not in a pretentious way, but in a way that it's like it's a gift. Just everything about this movie and like everything in it is something from, it's a piece of Cuarón's past as a filmmaker as well. There's references to Gravity, if you know where to look. There's mm-hmm. Children of Men references. There's a Harry Potter reference in there. I mean, kind of a Harry Potter reference, but that's not direct. But it's there. It's part of his journey as a filmmaker and his journey as a human being growing up in this family. And what I love is that he could have easily told this film from the point of view of one of the kids as being him, but he tells it from the point of view of the housekeeper.
Yeah.
Which is a beautiful way to tell a story that is very personal to you, not making it about you necessarily.
Yeah.
But still, it is about him. And it's just one of the great personal statements that any filmmaker has ever made.
I agree. All right, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, like Colin said, I mean, when I saw this at Toronto, it was the last movie I saw at Toronto, and I was told, go see Roma. Go see it. And then I had an opportunity, I saw it on a big screen, and it felt like being taken back to school in a good way, the kind of school that I enjoyed, film school. And, you know, watching it again on the small screen, and, you know, what a very personal story this is. And, you know, we kind of attached the Marwan Zemeckis stuff, you know, to it, whether or not that was his intention necessarily is up to debate. But here it's very clear. And it's very interesting watching his relationship autobiographically with children.
Mm-hmm.
Because you consider what has happened in movies that he's made, Children of Men, the backstory in Gravity,
yeah,
stuff like A Little Princess and Harry Potter and whatnot, and then what ultimately happens,
yeah,
in this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a real empathy towards all of that. And on top of that is just bravura filmmaking.
Yeah.
I mean, count how many times in the movies that he just puts a camera somewhere and then just goes back,
yeah,
and forth, and, you know, up to, you know, a crucial point late in the film. But, you know, but he still has to direct all the people and to follow in that frame and everything. And the cinematography is just is masterful. The storytelling is great. I want to punch that boyfriend in what he reveals, man, in a bedroom, you know, with, yeah, that sword that he's got. Really, oh, my God, I wanted to punch someone in him so bad. Yeah, and I couldn't get it out of me. Oh. You know, it's a masterful piece of work.
It is. There's just nothing. I mean, you know, I mean, nothing even came close this year. It's by far the best movie of the year. And I can't see it not winning the Oscar, both,
yeah,
foreign film and best picture. I wouldn't be surprised if it won both.
One could hope.
Yeah. It's a remarkable piece of work. This is cinema. This is the reason why I watch movies. This, mm-hmm, is absolutely the reason why. And all three of us chose Roma as the best movie of 2018.
Cool.
Because we're all,
yeah,
we're all smart.
That's, yes, right.
All right, guys, hang on, because we got to do the opposite now and do the worst. And then we got our subcategories, too. But right now, let's take a break. I'm going to give you some weather here on WGN. Welcome back. Olivia Cooke. Some Ready Player One, which was a very entertaining movie that almost made my top 20.
I would have liked to have seen that.
Yeah,
you'd be the only one to put a Spielberg, yeah, film on their top 20 this year.
Well, the last couple of years, I've been ranking them higher than you have.
You have. Yeah. You have.
So anyway, that was Ready Player One, which I really enjoyed the hell out of. I mentioned this to you, Eric, Colin, when I was talking with you know, Robert Zemeckis.
Yes.
A couple of weeks ago, we were bringing him down to the lobby to leave, and I was like, "Hey, what did you think of Ready Player One?" I said, "What did you think of Ready Player One?" And he just kind of wait, and there's a pause, and he goes, "Yeah, it was fun. I just don't know what the cube had to do with me." All right, we went from the best to the worst. By the way, if you've just tuned in, all three of us chose Roma, Alfonso Cuarón's brilliant new movie, as the best film of 2018, and it's by a landslide.
That you can see on Netflix right now, or, yeah, go and see 70mm at the Music Box.
And it's playing all week at the Music Box,
yep,
in 70mm, which is the appropriate way to see the movie.
Yeah.
All right, are you ready for the worst?
Mm-hmm.
All, yeah, right. I have, how many do we have here?
I have 15.
Okay. I have 15 as well.
Sure, I got more, but I'll go to 15. That's fine.
Okay, here we go. Truth or Dare, mm-hmm, Action Point, Deadpool 2, and I know I'm in the minority on,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you are.
Mary Shelley, Halloween, 1517 to Paris. Now we've got top 10 worst. Here we go. Death Wish, Sherlock Gnomes, which, wow, by the way, is worse than the John C. Reilly.
Holmes and Watson?
Yeah.
Worse than that?
Yeah, it's worse, wow, than Holmes. Holmes and Watson, actually, there were some scenes in that movie that made me laugh.
I laughed like three times.
Gotti. Vice, which I hated, by the way. Venom. Peppermint, which also wins Best Racist Movie of the Year.
A lot of competition for that.
Yeah.
But.
Mm-hmm. Dark Crimes. You Were Never Really Here. The Happy Time Murders. And number one, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Number 15, Night School. 14, 15, 17 to Paris. 13, Super Troopers 2. Number 12, The Hurricane Heist. 11, Uncle Drew. Number 10, Breaking In. Number 9, Aquaman. Number 8, Holmes and Watson. Number 7, Happy Town Murders. Number 6, Axel, or AXL, however you're supposed to say it. I don't know. Number 5, Peppermint. Number 4, this is an obscure one, but it's Abe and Phil's Last Poker Game. anybody watch that screener?
Yeah, screener.
Oh,
that
my
one.
God.
I have it. I didn't watch it.
Number 3, a movie called Kings. Number 2, Forever My Girl, which I think was a Nicholas Sparks thing. And number 1, Overboard.
Oh, that was a terrible movie. Mm. I can't believe I didn't include that one. Oh. Okay. All right, Eric.
Yeah. Number 15, Gringo. Number 14, The 1517 of Paris. That matches Colin. 13, Adrift. 12, The Miseducation of Cameron Post, which I absolutely hated. 11, Dark Crimes. Number 10, 50 Shades Freed. Number 9, Peppermint. Number 8, The First Purge. Number 7, Gotti. Number 6, Overboard. Number 5, Death Wish. Number 4, Hellfest. Number 3, Truth or Dare. Number 2, Slender Man. And number 1, Death of a Nation, convicted felon, Dinesh D'Souza's documentary.
Got it. All right. Are we ready for the subcategories?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
These are always, we come up with these, and we've got, okay, so best / funniest gag. I said the squeak toy scene in Game Night.
Yeah, that'd come up.
I laughed my ass off during that scene. It's so funny.
That is funny. Steve Buscemi trying to switch places at Stalin's funeral in Death of Stalin.
I put Baby Incredible discovering his powers in Incredibles 2.
That's great.
Yeah.
Best lines of dialogue or lines of exchange. I couldn't single it out, so I just said all of Death of Stalin.
Yeah, I couldn't single it out. I couldn't single anything out either. I just said the family pregnancy announcement in If Beale Street Could Talk.
Okay.
That's great. I put Too Many to Count in Death of Stalin, but I also put in Hereditary, You're Looking at Me with That Face on Your Face.
Yeah.
God, I love that line.
Best action scene, I don't know. It's Mission Impossible.
Yeah.
It's Fallout.
It's the whole thing.
Yeah, I just said anything involving a helicopter.
Right. Yeah.
I narrowed it down a little.
I put Helicopter Chase, Mission Impossible Fallout.
All right, best movie that didn't deserve to bomb, Marwin. Welcome to Marwin.
First Man.
Welcome to Marwin.
Best ensemble, Widows.
Death of Stalin and Widows.
Widows.
Best brainless movie, this is like, I can't believe I actually put this one, but I put Blockers.
I put Bumblebee. I was surprised by Bumblebee.
Oh. I'm not caught up on that one.
Yeah, me neither. I put Overlord.
Oh, I love that movie.
I didn't see it yet.
Oh, man. Worst smart movie, You Were Never Really Here.
White Boy Rick.
Tie between Boy Erased and The Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Okay.
Same subject matter.
A movie that made me the hungriest, Roma.
Mm. Ooh, that's a good choice. I put Green Book. I wanted some chicken.
Oh, yeah! Because Viggo Mortensen's eating like a pig that whole movie.
Yeah, fried chicken and all that.
He folds up a pizza at one
point. Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay.
I put Green Book.
Oh, Green Book, okay. Yeah. Biggest surprise, it's a tie between the Spider-Man movie and my reaction to Suspiria.
Mm. Yeah, Spider-Man.
Spider-Man.
Biggest disappointment, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Halloween.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
We're breaking now? Okay, we got a break right here. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we got more of the subcategories, and we'll wrap things up with Eric and Colin. I think this is Silvestri's best score since Forrest Gump. Marwin. Welcome to Marwin, which nobody saw.
Or liked,
except for me and Eric.
Dave Kerr.
And Dave Kerr. You can always count on Dave Kerr. He's like one of the presidents of the Zemeckis fan club.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get back to our subcategories. Biggest disappointment is the last one we did, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're doing that now, yeah.
Okay, biggest disappointment. I said Bohemian Rhapsody.
No, you said... Oh, is that what you... Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I said... okay. Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah, and I said Bohemian Rhapsody.
Okay. Best biopic or true story film? Welcome to Marwin.
Black Klansman. If that was, unless Death of Stalin counts. I mean, how true are we going here? I'm not sure, but
First Man.
Okay, worst biopic. Come on, Bohemian Rhapsody.
I put Vice, but I'll say I'll agree with Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah,
Vice is a piece of crap too.
Bohemian Rhapsody is worse.
I agree. the most romantic scene, my favorite scene, is the Bradley Cooper touching Lady Gaga's nose.
Mm.
That's one of my favorite moments.
A nice moment.
It's one of my favorite moments. And the Allman Brothers is cranking in the background. So
that's what I should have put. But this is a good one too. The wedding scene in Crazy Rich Asians I thought was pretty good.
I put the infamous or famous. I just wanted to take another look at you. Mm-hmm. Star is Born.
Yeah. Sexiest shot. Moment or scene, the very first time Dakota Johnson dances in Suspiria.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's pretty, it's, yeah.
That's not bad. I got another dancing thing, Natalie Portman and Vox Lux stage thing. I thought it was pretty great.
Well, at first I put about half of Red Sparrow, but then I put the scene between Ethan Hawke and Amanda Seyfried in the First Reform where she's laying on top of him.
Mm.
That's a.
Best moment of self-parody or self-referential, all of the origin gags in Spider-Man, in the Spider-Verse, all of the origin, the stuff.
Yeah. Those are great. I also like the Disney princesses in Ralph Breaks the Internet.
That's what the best scene in the movie, I think.
Yeah. I put the time machine in Marwan.
Nice. Very nice. Okay. Best score, I said Tom York for Suspiria.
Welcome to Marwan.
Oh, look at that.
I'll say something nice, too.
I appreciate that.
Silvestri.
Yeah. First Man.
All right. Best musical number, musical sequence, or dance number? I said the ending of Suspiria.
Fair enough.
That's a really good one. I went the way opposite way. The Nowhere to Go But Up from Mary Poppins Returns.
Oh, sure.
And I put Shallow from Star is Born, the first time they perform it.
Got it. Mm. Favorite tearjerker moment, First Man.
Roma, would you like to meet her?
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Good God, Colin. What are you doing? Stop it.
Yeah.
But I put Letting Go on the Moon.
That's
the moment you're referring to.
Best actor, I chose Viggo Mortensen.
In Green Book?
Yeah. Really? I adored him in that movie.
Okay.
I'm going to go with Ethan Hawke in First Reformed.
Yeah, I'm with Colin on this. Yeah.
Best actress, Toni Collette.
I'm going to... I agree with that, but also Carey Mulligan in Wildlife.
She's amazing.
Yeah.
I agree with Colin again.
Okay. Best supporting actor, Anton Yelchin.
Richard E. Grant, Can You Ever Forgive
He's
Me?
He's great.
Mm. Stephen Ewan Burning.
Best supporting actress, I says Elizabeth Debicki.
Regina King, If Beale Street Could Talk.
Elizabeth Debicki, Widows.
Worst actor, Jim Carrey in Dark Crime.
Eugenio Derbez from Overboard.
Eugenio Derbez from Overboard. Okay. And I also put Dinesh D'Souza as himself in Death of a Nation.
Okay. Worst actress, Melissa McCarthy in the Happy Time Murders.
That's what I have, too.
Amber Heard in Aquaman.
Okay. Mm. Best monologue, Olivia Cooke's monologue in Thoroughbreds, the very first time that they confront each other in Thoroughbreds.
From Blindspotting, David Diggs' final verse in that movie.
Okay.
For a dramatic one, I put, there's a moment on Ethan Hawke talks about hope and despair in First Reformed. For comedic purposes, Tom Waits has a monologue about a family event early on that the punchline of that kills me.
Mm-hmm. All right. Most nail-biting moment, I said the whole climax on with the helicopter of Michigan Impossible. Mm.
I put Emily Blunt in the house by herself in Quiet Place.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I put the drive home from Hereditary.
Oh, God. best ending or final moment, I got to go with Thoroughbreds on that.
Quiet Place.
Quiet Place.
Okay. And then best retro film-going experience, but not excluding something that we hosted.
Mm-hmm.
The Thing in 70mm at the Music Box.
Mm. Finally seeing True Stories on the big screen at the Siskel Film Center.
You'd never seen it on the big screen?
No, it was in 35mm.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Pristine print.
Nice. Yeah. Well, sure, because nobody ever
Nobody plays it. Yeah.
All right.
I put finally seeing I Want to Hold Your Hand on the big screen for the first time.
Oh, that was at my screening.
I didn't host that.
Yeah.
You did.
Okay. The Better Fate. Now, I threw one in here because you said this is a ranking of movies that should have made $1 million.
Well, yeah, these are movies that did not make $1 million, so we think they should have done
All right.
better.
Well, I chose Love, Gilda, Support the Girls, and then I just wrote in Marwan because I'm tired of it.
Should have made at least $1 million more. Okay.
Should be more. Damn it.
I put The Endless, Minding the Gap, and Monsters and Men.
Okay.
I put The Oath, The Endless, and Bodied.
All right, and then Calm Down, Critics. Sorry to Bother You. Searching and The Hate U Give.
And these are for movies that rated 90% or better on Rotten Tomatoes.
And,
And I put The Hate U Give, Searching, and Love, Simon.
I put The Favorite, Sorry to Bother You, and Can You Ever Forgive Me?
All right. Well, there it is.
And I'm looking forward to one more.
Oh, I didn't even. Jeez, I didn't do. I always forget that one. Don't I do that every year?
I don't know.
What are looking forward to most in 2019? What do you guys got?
Star Wars 9, whatever that's going to be.
Yeah, episode but 9. Star Wars 9, Toy Story 4, and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Shaun the Sheep 2, How to Train Your. I am looking forward
How
to
How to Train Your Dragon, the new How to Train Your Dragon movie. I'm all over that.
Yeah. The new Laika movie, The Missing Link.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to our opening night movie from last year finally getting released, Fast Color. Has not been released yet.
That's right.
All right.
Well, it was a good year, and again, the last time we had this happen was Fury Road.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very agreeable year.
All three of us chose the same best movie of the year, and this one being a real stunner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, this is a big time work of art with Roma. Now, what do we got next week?
Oh, we have The Upside with Bryan Cranston and Kevin Hart.
Right. And we have Stan and Ollie.
That's opening wider, finally.
And then we have A Dog's Way Home.
Dog's Way Home, yes.
Mm-hmm. And The House That Jack Built.
Yeah, Lars von Trier's latest film.
And Angel.
Right.
Yeah. What was The Upside? Was it? Was
Intouchables. The French movie, The Intouchables.
Oh, that's
remake.
What it is?
Yeah. The movie actually, The Upside, it premiered at Toronto in 2017. The Weinsteins had it.
Oh.
And that unraveled.
Oh.
So STX, it went in limbo for a while. STX picked it up and released it in January.
Yeah, I was wondering how, that happened.
Yeah.
Like Kevin Hart's in this movie, all of a sudden, what? Where did this come from? So, All right, well, guys, thanks again. It was a great year, and we will talk to you next Monday morning.
You won't talk to me, but yeah.
Oh, that's right. You're taking some time off.
Yes.
So Jim will be. How long are you going to be gone?
I don't know.
Okay.
A long time.
All right.
It could be a while.
All right, Colin Suter. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you,
and have a great new year. And we'll have Jim Laskowski filling in for Colin. I forgot that you were leaving. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay, guys, take care.
All right,
we'll take a break, and we'll come back after this on 720 WG.